From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia. Online at WVHTF.org.
At the legislature today, members of the West Virginia Senate welcome a new senator after a Supreme Court ruling Friday, a ruling that required the appointment of a Republican. We focus in on fracking tonight with a special report detailing the updated version of a bill that died in a tie during the 2015 session. And General James Hoyer joins us to discuss the latest on the weekend's winter storm, coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. A winter storm this weekend dropped more than 30 inches of snow in some parts of West Virginia. Governor Tomlin declared a state of emergency Friday for all 55 counties, and the declaration continues this evening. A state of emergency allows the governor to provide additional resources to the people of the state, including the aid of the West Virginia National Guard. Here this evening to discuss the Guard's efforts over the weekend is Adjutant General James Hoyer. General, thank you so much for being here.
Pleasure to be here, Mom.
Let's talk about the Guard's response over the weekend. What were you all called out to do?
So, Ashton, we had about 150 people on duty and doing everything from providing wrecker trucks to move vehicles off of highways to open arteries back through for important uses, as well as we have what we call community assessment teams. These are teams normally of two Humvees with Army and Air personnel who go out and respond in support of our local partners to emergencies. They responded to everything from heart attack to a distressed motorist who was stuck on Interstate 77 who needed some assistance.
Let's talk about that a little bit more, because it wasn't just one distressed motorist on I-77, it was hundreds of them.
Yes, it was. Primarily caused by a number of tractor trailers that didn't heed the appropriate warnings and get off the road properly. Our crews, along with the state police, the county, Kanawha County folks, as well as the Division of Highways and some other local partners, from 9:30 Friday evening until 5:30 in the morning on Saturday, moved over 70 tractor trailers to make room for highways to be able to come through and clear. And they responded to guardsmen on foot, along with our highways counterparts, responded to approximately 200 individuals who were stranded, checking to make sure they were okay, moving that medical emergency off and getting it to Charleston as it needed to be.
So that was one of the major responses, the major operations. But I saw a photo on Facebook of guardsmen helping a man to go to his dialysis treatment. You all really do it all.
Absolutely. These men and women in the West Virginia National Guard are a pretty amazing group of people. And you combine them with their first responder and law enforcement partners and the VOAD and the Red Cross folks across the state. You got a pretty effective team. And we did respond to some medical emergencies like the dialysis treatment that you described. Again, as I mentioned, a heart attack victim that they were able to work with paramedics to get stabilized. A number of other activities going on across the state. And all this goes on while the West Virginia National Guard has 33 Army facilities and two air bases that still have to be prepared to do their military mission. So we're digging out of the two air bases in order to send airplanes overseas to respond to our nation's needs overseas. And I will tell you that particularly in Charleston and Martinsburg, getting those bases open and ready to go was a significant challenge.
The state of emergency came early Friday morning, but Governor Tomlin had issued a state of preparedness earlier in the week. Can you talk to us a little bit about what that means for the Guard? What does that allow you all to do?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something that we learned from past responses, from particularly the derecho and Hurricane Sandy. What people hopefully understand is that Guardsmen are primarily citizen soldiers. Most of our folks are not full-time. So in order to be better prepared, we have to pre-position personnel and assets in ahead of a storm or ahead of an event. So the state of preparedness gives the governor the statutory authority to call in National Guard assets, to have our trucks and our Humvees pre-staged, to have the wrecker trucks ready to go, but more importantly, to safely get our men and women into these locations ahead of time so that we can get ahead of the response. And one of the things I think we've done a pretty good job over the past several years as a state is our citizens take seriously the requests we make of them to be prepared, and we attempt as best we can to get ahead of emergency response, and that helps us take care of people better, and in the long run it helps reduce our overhead cost of what we have to pay for a disaster response.
Well, reporting on the storm over the weekend, it's nice for me to be able to say that things seemed to go smoothly. There wasn't a lot to report. So General James Hoyer with the West Virginia National Guard, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Ashton.
A new member was sworn into the West Virginia Senate today after a Supreme Court ruling Friday. The state Democratic Party asked the court to rule on the replacement of former Wyoming County Senator Daniel Hall. A Democrat at the time of his election, Hall switched parties following the 2014 midterms, giving the GOP a majority in the chamber. But his resignation earlier this year had state leaders questioning which party his replacement should come from. The court ruled a Republican would be appointed to the seat, and Governor Tomlin made his choice over the weekend.
Senator Klein, welcome to the West Virginia State Senate. How about a round of applause?
Members of the West Virginia Senate welcomed Sue Klein of Wyoming County to the chamber Monday during their morning floor session. Klein had taken her oath of office just moments before. A longtime realtor in Beckley, Klein has some political background. She ran for the House of Delegates in 2014, but lost to a Democratic incumbent. Now, she's one of just two women in the state's upper chamber. Klein says she wants to focus on diversifying the state's economy and educating the state's youth during her time as senator.
I'm for coal 100%, but coal was never going to come back like it was. It's going to come back better, and it's going to come back different, but it's not going to be like it used to be. And we got to get that out there. I mean, we've got to get prepared for that, and we've also got to get prepared for other businesses because everybody's not a miner.
Klein has already filed pre-candidacy papers to run for the House of Delegates. She says she'll decide this week if she'll run for the House or try her shot at her current seat in the Senate. Attorney General Patrick Morrissey is facing some criticism after an article in the Charleston Gazette-Mail reported he paid an outside law firm $600,000 more than his policy on outside legal fees allows. Still, Morrissey told lawmakers last week his policy has saved West Virginians $300,000 since its implementation in 2013. Liz McCormick reports lawmakers are now trying to make that policy law.
When Attorney General Patrick Morrissey took office, he implemented a new policy to govern how the state should hire outside counsel when his office needs help in a case. The policy implemented a bidding process and also capped the legal fees those outside attorneys can collect. Now, members of the House of Delegates are looking to make his policies law with House Bill 4007. House Judiciary Chair John Schott says the law simply makes the process of hiring outside counsel to represent the state clearer for the Attorney General's office in the future.
It was felt that it made sense that since the Attorney General went to a great deal of trouble to come up with a process that's formalized now, but it could change with the next Attorney General. And because of the criticisms in the past as to how that was handled and how loosely it was handled and how it resulted in what a lot of people thought was excessive compensation that ordinarily would have been state money go to outside counsel. It was felt it was a good idea to put that process in the law so it would apply in all future to all future attorney generals.
House Bill 4007 passed 96-1. Eight more bills were read on the House floor today, including House Bill 4005, repealing the state's prevailing wage rate, which will be up for a vote on Wednesday. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
Bob Ashley is a Republican member of the Senate from Roane County. Ashley was appointed to the Senate in 2015 to represent the 3rd District. Before his appointment, Senator Ashley served as a member of the West Virginia House of Delegates, serving from 1984 through 1998 and 2000 until 2015. Bill Anderson is a Republican from Wood County. First elected in 1992, Anderson represents the House's 8th District. Delegate Anderson serves as the House Speaker pro tem. Anna Border Shepherd is a Republican delegate from Wood County. Elected in 2012, she represents the state's 8th House District. Delegate Border Shepherd serves as the Vice Chair of the Committee on Senior Issues and has served as the Chaplain of the West Virginia Federation of Republican Women. The delegate plays the bagpipes and enjoys knitting and painting.
In a dramatic turn of events last year at the State House, a bill died in a tied vote during the last night of the session. At issue was whether companies should be allowed to force mineral owners to sell their gas if the majority of their neighbors have already agreed to sell. Forced pooling. Glennis Board reports the topic resurfaced during interim meetings this year and is a priority for the Republican majority.
The controversial 2015 bill would have allowed drillers to force owners to sell their minerals if a company could get 80% of a land parcel to agree to the drilling. The bill also specified that the 20% of mineral owners forced to sell would still get paid for their proportion of gas drilled. Industry representatives have been pushing forced pooling legislation at the Capitol since the Horizontal Well Control Act was passed in 2011. They say pooling is necessary to make sure gas resources aren't wasted. Opponents say it amounts to an illegal property grab. The West Virginia Royalty Owners Association used to be the loudest of opponents, but Vice President Tom Huber joined State House Delegate Woody Ireland in promoting forced pooling legislation last year. Huber says he was involved in shaping that legislation.
Those negotiations were tense. They were difficult. We debated ad nauseum a lot of issues, but we actually came out of that process with a pretty impressive bill that was good policy and protected property owner rights while giving the gas companies the ability to efficiently develop the gas in this state.
But that bill died during the last session. A revised bill has since been written, which Huber says is even better than last year's. Huber organized and moderated discussions around the state over the past several months to collect ideas and discuss possible implications of new legislation. The main thrust of his argument is that in exchange for providing companies with a legal pooling method, property owners get protections and rights to negotiate the terms of developing the gas.
I think we want the minerals developed responsibly, efficiently, with as minimal disturbance of surface properties as possible. And the maximum amount of money coming back into the state in the form of royalties, severance taxes, and jobs. So I think that's got to be our goal.
But plenty of people still oppose the revised bill.
There are two basic groups. One are a group of people who are opposed to developing natural resources and do not like the idea of the oil and gas being developed and oppose it on any grounds. Mm-hmm. And then there's a group who are opposing the forced pooling bill, of which I'm one, because we feel it takes unfair advantage of the property or mineral rights owners here in the county.
That's president of the Brooke, Ohio County Farm Bureau, John Smith. He campaigned hard against the pooling bill during the last legislative session.
They have rewritten the bill. Two or three of the more objectionable things have been taken out, but there's still a lot of problems with that bill.
But there's really nothing simple about shale gas. Smith talks about tax concerns, constitutional and legal concerns, a lack of transparency and control regarding lease deals, and restricted access to industry knowledge when he talks about the current draft of force pooling legislation, just to name some of the major issues he has. But the number of those who oppose the legislation alongside Smith has dwindled some. That's partly because there's talk now about completely different legislation that would, for all sakes and purposes, make forced pooling a much simpler matter.
The wrinkle this year is there's a competing proposal from a single gas company, EQT, that they call lease integration. They passed this proposal in Pennsylvania in 2013, and it's been pretty devastating for a lot of mineral owners up there.
The language in the Pennsylvania bill is a brief paragraph. It essentially allows companies to pool gas rights without consent from mineral owners as long as some kind of lease already exists, and as long as that lease doesn't expressly prohibit pooling. The paragraph doesn't mention surface owners, and it leaves royalty payments to the discretion of drillers. Pennsylvanians say the law has become a tool companies use to beat down non-consenting property owners. Northern Panhandle resident and a Republican, John Smith, believes that's true of both versions of pooling legislation. While he admits that he's not opposed to pooling altogether, he worries that the legislative process may take what he considers an already unsatisfactory bill and make it worse.
I could see it being changed where I would consider it acceptable. I'm not sure that I would enthusiastically support it. But of course, in the legislature, bills change.
Meanwhile, EQT says lawmakers would be wise to instead consider the kind of lease integration legislation Pennsylvania has adopted. The company says that in these days of low gas prices, industry needs extra incentive to continue to develop gas in West Virginia. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Glynis Board in Wheeling.
And you just heard from our next guest in that story. Tom Huber is the vice president of the West Virginia Mineral Owners Association, and he worked on a compromise version of the force pooling bill that's now before state lawmakers. Tom, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So we just heard in that story the gentleman from the Farm Bureau say that this bill is still bad. There are still issues with it. Do you agree or disagree with that statement?
I would tend to disagree. I've been involved in numerous lease negotiations, so I know what it's like to be on the royalty owner's side of that table. The things that he talks about beating you down into a bad lease, they're things like deductions from your royalty, which means you're surrendering basically 75% of what you're owed in a royalty check. They're things like surface use agreements, wanting specifically to prevent, you know, the well pad being next to your house. Things of that nature. All of those protections exist in the bill. And as a royalty owner, you can use the fact that there is a force pooling bill on the books to say, listen, guys, force pool me. Take me to the commission, and I'll get everything I want because it's in the law, and I'll still get paid. Additionally, and this gets glossed over, but I think it's probably one of the most important parts of the bill, is that as a royalty owner, if you get taken to the commission and forced in, you have options. You can choose to be leased, you can choose to sell, or you can choose to be a participating operator. If you're a participating operator, you can not only keep your royalty interest, but you can keep what we call the working interest, which is what the gas company normally gets as far as what they get paid off of well. You essentially become a partner as to your amount of acreage in the unit with the gas company. That's a huge deterrent for gas companies to even use this process because they're going to be out the money that they would receive for the working interest, and they're going to have to share information about how they market the gas, just what they use as far as their finances to drill the well. So that's not something they would want to do under any normal circumstance. The bill has changed significantly, even since the last I talked to your reporter, because there are concerns by some people in the state that they do not want their gas developed, period. End of story. So the solution that we've come up with is to allow for an underground easement where the well bore is not perforated and not fracked, so that the gas under that specific tract is not produced. But the gas company can then produce the tract that's here and the tract that's here, just not the tract in between.
So it's a very complicated bill.
Yes,
it is a very complicated piece of legislation. Last year when we talked about this bill, lawmakers were focused on force pooling in the Marcellus Shale, something that's big in north central West Virginia. But is it the case that we're not focused on force pooling, we're not focused on just the Marcellus anymore? This bill focuses on all levels of the shale.
Well, yeah, this was brought up last year. This would apply to any horizontal well at any formation. Currently, under state code, anything below the Onondaga limestone is considered a deep well. And we have what we call the deep well statute, which allows for force pooling on any formation below the Onondaga limestone. This includes the Utica Shale, which some of your viewers may have seen some of the news coming out of that formation with monster wells drilled in Tyler County, Wetzel County, Marshall County, and Greene County, Pennsylvania. So the industry will be moving, and it won't be overnight, but they'll be moving to the deeper stuff as it proves to be profitable. And we don't have the protections that we have in this compromise piece of legislation in our current statute.
So this is to ensure the protection of those people who may be asked to sell their rights that are far below the Marcellus Shale.
Yes.
So why do this now? Why is this an appropriate time? Because the industry is changing?
Well, from our standpoint, it was probably an appropriate time to start these discussions when the technology changed, which was fairly recently. When I started in this business in 2004, they weren't drilling horizontal wells. It was not an issue. Now it's a huge issue because every well is a horizontal well. So every well requires a unit, and it requires you to combine acreage. It's refreshing that Chairman Ireland has decided that the best way to craft one of these bills is to have a collaborative process with all the stakeholders so that all of our needs and concerns are addressed to the best that any bill can address them. But with the deep well statute on the books, it's almost imperative that we do this now, because eventually there will be a financial incentive to resist any kind of reform of the pooling law for the natural gas industry. Because if they move into the Utica, it becomes, and they have a current pooling law that they like, there's no reason to reform it to add protections for the mineral owner or the surface owner of the state of West Virginia.
Now, we heard in that piece mentioned the EQT version of the bill, and that bill was actually introduced in the Senate today.
Yes, it was.
It's something that you're strongly opposed to. Tell us why.
Okay, so Senate Bill 383 is our organization's nightmare scenario, because we've seen what it does. It's a short paragraph, it's a one-page bill. At first it says if you have an old lease that does not specifically prohibit pooling, the company has the inherent right to pool. The second line says on those leases, they can use the surface above those leases. And third, it says absent an agreement to the contrary, the gas company determines what they will pay you for your share of the production. Currently, they have to get me to sign a lease modification on an old lease. That means probably some kind of signing bonus, means I can negotiate a higher royalty percentage. And because of the Taney decision, they can't take deductions from leases that they don't specifically have the right to. It completely throws all that out the window.
So this version of the bill, unlike the one that you all are backing, it kind of takes away the rights that you all are trying to fight for.
And from our side of the aisle, I know on the pooling bill, there's some disagreement among royalty owners and landowners. But on EQT's lease integration, everybody's pretty much agreed on our side of the aisle. We don't like it. Surface owners, royalty owners, Farm Bureau, nobody likes it.
Tom Huber with the West Virginia Mineral Owners Association. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Tomorrow on the Legislature Today, we're joined by the chairman of the House and Senate Finance Committees, Delegate Eric Nelson, and Senator Mike Hall, to discuss the difficult budgeting process that lies ahead of them. And Senator Chris Walters will join us to talk about expanding access to broadband in West Virginia. This has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.